Good afternoon. We are on Chav Gimel Amud Beis in Sanhedrin, continuing in the discussion of the Masech. We've spent a considerable amount of time dealing with the Mishnah and the Shitas in the Mishnah, the Chacham and Rav Meir. Actually, most of our time was dedicated to the discussion of Rabbi Meir. And we're going to move ahead. Here's what we're going to do today. We're going to first just run through the Gemara. It's a terrible way to say it, but you'll forgive me. I'm just, you know, the Daf Yomi just trains me. So the okay. Okay. So anyway, we're going to run through the Gemara, and then obviously I have an agenda for today in terms of what we're going to be discussing. I already mentioned last week what we're going to be discussing today. I have some Armakomas as well that were sent out. If you have a copy, great. If not, that's also fine. You can, either way. Okay, it happens to be, just to put a bow to the entire discussion, Rabbi Meir, we actually have one more opinion, which we're not going to spend a good amount of time doing, but I just feel like we're going to, you know, it's a chaval that we go through the Gemara, we don't see all the Gemara. So if you take a look on the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis, so again, Rav Meir Shita says that you could passel the other litigants' witnesses. It's nearly an impossible position to fathom and to understand. We spent a considerable amount of time going over some of the explanations given by the Amoraim, and then we added subsequent explanations as well. Kiyasa Ravin Amar Rav Yochanan, and Ravin comes in and gives what is to us the fourth explanation of Rabbi Meir. So for those of you who've been keeping score, the first answer was given by Reish Lakish in the bottom of Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. Second explanation was given by Rav Elazar on the towards the top of Chaf Gimel Amud Beis. A third answer was Rav Dimi in the name of Rav Yochanan. And this is the fourth answer of Ravin in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Reisha Beidim Psulim, V'dayanim Kshirim, Migu Depasli Eidim, Pasli Nami Dayani. Seva V'dayanim Psulim, V'edim Kshirim, Demigu Depasli Dayan, Pasli Nami Eidim. So again, just without spending a good amount of time on this, just to give the Gemara Kipshuto according to Rashi, it basically means as follows. What ends up happening is that you come into court, you're a litigant, you come into court and you start disqualifying everybody. Right? Guns ablaze. Those judges over there, they're terrible. I've heard stories about them being bribed. I was gambling with one of them the other day. They're terrible. And those witnesses over there, those witnesses are a disaster, right? They're crooks. They're thieves. And you go in there, guns are blazing, and you apostle everybody. So now what comes out is that after you've leveled charges against everybody, now you're baldover, you're a litigant. No one's going to be listening to you. But turns out you were right. Turns out that in comes another set of witnesses and tells us that the judges are no good. So now you're right. We wouldn't have believed you on your own, but we now have substantiated information that you're right. So since we're believed about the judges, you're also going to be believed about the witnesses. Okay, this is an interesting application, an interesting usage of the word migu. This is not normally the way it's understood, but basically, since you're believed about one, you're going to be believed about something else as well. So, maskal rava bishlam migu de pasle edim pasle nami dayana iga beidina achrina ela migu de pasle dayana pasle nami edim. To which the Gemara says, here's what I don't understand. I can fathom this idea that you're going to be passling judges, because when all said and done, sof kol sof, you'll get another Beis Din. All right, so you go to another Beis Din. But passling witnesses, so when we're talking about passling witnesses, you can't just simply come up with other witnesses. There are no other witnesses. So the Gemara says, we're talking about where there is a second set of witnesses. So the Gemara says, Kasa Cheres. So we're talking about a second set of witnesses. So the Gemara says, Kasa Cheres, my Hachinami Dolamati Pasle, Haina Durabdimi. Comes down now, the Rabin's answer is really the same as Ravdimi's answer. So he can benay, the Gemara says, well, we can strike a small difference between them in Migu. The Marsav Armin Amigu, Marsav Allah Armin Amigu. Okay, and the Gemara says, and really what comes out now is that you're right. Ravdimi and Rabin are basically saying the same answer. They both really will only allow the passing of witnesses if there's a second set of witnesses. And really, the only difference between them is whether or not we subscribe to this concept of migu, where I come into court and I apostle everybody, and it turns out I'm right about one of the two. If I'm right about one, am I believed about the other? So Rav Dimi says, you're not, and Ravin says, you are. Okay, Adkan. That brings us to the end of the Gemara's discussion regarding Reb Meir Gufa. We are now on Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, and we are about 10 lines from the top of the Amud, the beginning of the line, Amar Reish Lakish. Now, you remember the first answer that was given to, how do you understand Reb Meir? How can you passel the litigants? How can the litigant passel the Edim? So Reish Lakish says, Pekadosh Yomar Davar Zeh, Tini Edom. So Reish Lakish's first answer, which is the Gemara ended up rejecting, is that we're going to have to change the Mishnah from the word Edov to Edo, where it was only one witness and not two witnesses. Okay. And again, the Gemara slugged up that answer. Eni, the Gemara says, now, V'hamar Ula Rosh Reish Lakish Bebeis HaMedrash, Ki Ilo Oker Harim V'tochnen Zebezeh. From this point until the Mishnah, which is coming up about three quarters of the way down in the daf, the Gemara now is going to launch into, I guess we can call it a Gadata. It's not so much a Gadata, but really more of a description of the Jewish communities that existed back then. There were two Jewish communities back then, one living in Bavel and one in Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara over here is now going to launch into the following discussion. Let's see the Gemara. Let's first familiarize ourselves with the Gemara. How could Reish Lakish, in reference to Rabbi Meir, call Rabbi Meir Pe Kadosh, a holy mouth, when meanwhile Reish Lakish himself, he was Pe Kadosh? In fact, the Gemara says, "Haroes Reish Lakish beBeis Medrash Kilo Oker Harim Tochnen Zebezeh." You saw Reish Lakish in the Beis Medrash. He would take mountains and then grind the mountains together. Obviously, a metaphor. It means that he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham with a tremendous mind. I'm Ravina Balo Kol Haro Rav Meir beBeis Medrash. So Ravina says, "I'm not bothered by that. If you saw Rabbi Meir in the Beis Medrash, so Kilo Oker Harim Tochnen Zebezeh." His mind was so powerful, taking the greatest of mountains and grinding them up together. Once again, a metaphor describing the powerful thinking process of Rebbe Meir. Right? I mentioned before, the Gemara elsewhere says that the colleagues of Rebbe Meir, lo yar lasov dato, like they couldn't even get to the depth of his understanding and his intellect. So hachi kamers, the Gemara says, you're right. Your point is very well taken. So the Gemara says, here's the observation we're making. Reish Lakish is talking about Rebbe Meir. Now, they're not colleagues. Rebbe Meir was of an earlier generation, but I'd say approximately two generations earlier than Reish Lakish. But when he makes reference to Rebbe Meir, he calls him Pe Kadosh, calls him the Holy Mouth. Look at how much they love one another. So the Gemara tells another story about how much love these Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael had for each other. So Rebbe, for example, was sitting, and he made a statement, a declarative statement, that one is prohibited from insulating cold food on Shabbos. So you know that there's an Isra in the Torah. There's an Isra in the Gemara in Shabbos.
Just repeat that last one.
So Kamar says, "He had the Yosef Rebbe." Rebbe was sitting down. The Kamar, and he said, "Asur l'hatmin satzonin. One is prohibited from insulating cold food. There is an Isra on Shabbos to insulate hot food. One is not allowed to take a food on Shabbos and insulate it. There's distinctions in the halacha between a davar hamosif hevel and a davar sheino mosif hevel." But in the meantime, just to keep this discussion of the Gemara very streamlined, let's just say that it's also to insulate hot food. And on that, Rebbe came up with a psak, and Rebbe's psak is that it's true you're not allowed to insulate cold as well. You're not allowed to put bundles around the cold food in order to keep it cold. So Amar Lefana Rebbe Shmuel Bar Rebbe Yossi. So when Rebbe Shmuel Bar Rebbe Yossi heard this, his comment was, Abba Hitir Lahatmin Esatzone. My father allowed for the insulation of cold food, meaning I think it is perfectly permissible to do so. My father told me it's okay. I'm like Fahar Zakin. And when Rebbe heard this, Rebbe said, "Your father said it's okay. It's okay." Kvar horizaking. The elder came out with a ruling, and I'm not going to disregard or dispute the ruling of the elder. Amar Papa Bare Kama Mechavin Zed Zed. And the Gemara once again makes another commentary in terms of how much they loved one another. The Ila Rabbi Yossi Kim Hayakafa Vyoshlev of Ne Rebbe. So we know that if Rabbi Yossi were alive during the days of Rebbe, he wasn't. But had he been alive during the days of Rebbe, so he would have been subservient to Rebbe. Daha Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi Memale Makam Avosav Hava. Because Rebbe Yishmael Rabbi Yossi was basically replacing his father. The Hayakaf of Yoshlef of Rebbe. And Rabbi Yishmael himself was subservient to Rebbe. He capitulated to Rebbe. The Ka'amar Kvar HaRazakin. So basically, by extension, we would have guessed, the Gemara is obviously making an assumption, But with the assumption is that had Rav Yossi been alive, he would have yielded to Rebbe. But what did Rav Yossi have? He had the benefit of being of the previous generation. He came out with a psak. And Rebbe says, you know what? Rebbe Yossi said the psak. I'm going to abide by the psak. I don't agree, but I'm going to abide by it. And in fact, his response was, Kvar Hora Zaken, the elder already came up with a ruling, and I'm not going to argue. So two times over now, the Gemara says, Kama Mechavin Zedzeh, that the Amoraim and Eretz Yisrael loved each other, respected each other. Look at the way they talked about one another. Okay. Now, the Gemara is going to get a little bit esoteric right now, so stay with me. As the I guess we can call this just absolute agadita. I'm Rabbi Yoshi. I'm Idichsiv Ekach Lishne Maklos Lecha Karasi Noam Velacha Karasi Chovlim. I took two sticks. This is a nevuah. It's a nevuah out of Zechariah. And in the nevuah, he has the vision of seeing two sticks. One of them is referred to as Noam, the other one is referred to as Chovlim. Noam, Elu, Tamid HaChacham, Sheberet Yisrael. The stick of Noam is a metaphor representing the Tamid HaChacham and Meveret Yisrael. Pleasant. Shemanim imzeh lazeh behalacha. They're pleasant to one another in halacha. Chovlim, Elu, Tamid HaChacham, Shebabava. And the Chovlim is a term dedicated to the Tamid HaChacham of Bava. Shemechablim zeh behalacha. They assault each other in halacha. And again, continuing in the Pesukim in Zechariah, the Gemara is now going to darshan. And there are two olives. So again, another reference to the Tamid Chacham and Meretz Yisrael. They're like they're smooth to each other. They're pleasant to each other, like olive oil. Shnayim zeitzim alaha elu Tamid Chacham shebebavel shemarum zel zeba alacha kizayis. And meanwhile, the branch itself, the twig itself, bite into the twig. It's bitter. And what's that bitterness? That bitterness is the Tamid Chacham and Mabavel. The Esayinai v'arevi inei shtayim nashim yotzos v'ruch bechanfeim. And again, continuing in the Pesukim in the Nevuah of Zechariah, the Gemara now is going to darshan the pasuk. V'lahena knafaim kekanfei hachasida v'tisaena ha'ifa beina shamayim uveina aretz. So again, a vision of nashim with knafaim, with wings, and they were carrying an eifa, some measurement. It'll become clear in just a moment what we're talking about. And v'omer la'malach adover bi'anahim amalichos etz ha'ifa. Where are they taking the package? And what they're doing with the package, they're taking it and they're going to the land of Shinar. Shinar, by the way, is Bavel. And the women carrying the Eifa are representative of two Midos. Two very unrefined midos. One of them is chanufa. Chanufa is flattery. We just did in the Gemara and Sota in the Daf Yomi, right? The Mishnah and the Gemara that dealt with the iser of chanifa. One is not allowed to flatter. One of the kings was flattered by the chachamim in the Mishnah in the eighth parak of Sota. Anyway, so chanufa v'gas zaruach and gas zaruach is arrogant. So these are very unrefined characteristics. Traits. Shiardul Bavel, and they both were taken to Bavel. Meaning, if you want to find where Chanufa is, and if you want to find where Gasas Aruach is, both flattery and arrogance, you'll go to Bavel because that's where they were transported. These character traits were taken to Bavel. The Gemara notes, however, that it doesn't seem to be perfectly consistent with what else we know. It was said, there are 10 measurements of arrogance that went into the world. Nine of them went to Elam. Elam is basically what we would refer to as Iran, Persia. The Achaz Kolam Kulo, and the rest of it went to and one part went to the rest of the world. So Iran took up 9/10 of the arrogance of this world. So in Labavel Nachis Vishtarvu Vishtarvev La'elam. So the Gemara says, yeah, the Gemara says that originally the arrogance was deposited in Bavel, what we would call Iraq, and then Ishtarvu Vishtarvev, it then rolled over into Elam. Dekanami Dechsiv Liv Nosla Bayis Ber Shinar. And the Gemara says that if you read the Psukim in the Navi carefully, you'll see that it says that the two women deposited, but there was only one house that was created in Shinar, meaning that the Chanufa stayed in Shinar, but the the gasas aruch did not end up staying in Shinar. Shema mina. V'hamar amar siman lagasas aruch anias. V'anias labavel naches. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I'll challenge you with the following. We know that what follows gasas aruch is poverty. And we know that in Babel they were poor. So labavel naches. So my anias, anias Torah. So the Gemara says, no. And when we are talking about anias over here, we're talking about not poverty, financial poverty, but poverty in terms of Torah. They didn't know Torah as well. Dechsev, achos lanu ketana v'shadayim ein la. The Gemara quotes a passage from Shir Hashirim, talking about an undeveloped woman, a girl, and Amrav Yochanan zu elam shezach salomo v'lo zach salalameh. So elam is a place where they were zochet to learn, but they weren't zochet to teach. In other words, an undeveloped understanding of Torah, where they were able to learn the Torah, but they weren't able to give over the Torah. So my bavel. So then the Gemara asks the question, why is bavel referred to as bavel? What's behind the name? Amrav Yochanan belula b'mikra belula b'mishnah belula b'talmud. It is mixed up with chumash mishnah and talmud. B'mechashchem oshivanu k'meisei olam. The Gemara concludes this whole discussion by saying he has walked me through the dark like the dead of the world. The pasuk in Eicha, the Gemara explains, "Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Zu Talmuda Shel Bavel." This is the Talmud of Bavel.
Okay.
With all this, it's there are, I guess, how do I say this? There are more stark examples in the Gemara of Lashon Hara, which the Chafetz Chaim himself tries to treat and deal with in his Sefer. But this is just an overall description of the communities.
It's interesting. It's in the Talmud Bavli.
Correct. I was going to point that irony out. That's an absolute correct irony. So the this Gemara over here affords us an unbelievable opportunity to now have a discussion regarding the Talmud Bavli versus the Talmud Yerushalmi. Okay. So let's do that now. So after just having seen the Gemara, and admittedly I went through quickly, but after having seen the Gemara, so now we certainly get a flavor of how the Gemara, and as pointed out, it's a tremendous irony that we're learning right now Talmud Bavli, and this is the way they're describing themselves, and this is the way they're describing the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael. We have now a little flavor of how they felt about one another, or certainly how the Chachmei Bavel viewed Chachmei Eretz Yisrael. And what it allows us to do is to pause and to make the following note. I'll ask it in the form of a question, and I'll provide a couple of suggested answers. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi put together the Mishnayos. He was the grand editor of the Mishnah, put it together in approximately the year 200 of the Common Era, right? About 140, 130 years after Chorban Bayis Sheni. And the Mishnah, no, is undisputed. Rav Yehuda HaNasi was the Nasi. He was the undisputed leader of the Jewish people. So his work of Torah Shabbat Peh being formulated into Shisha Sedarim was something which was Chok Lo Yavar. It was an absolute. And so, from that point going forward, anyone who wanted to learn Torah Shabbat Peh, so they would learn... Yeah, it's a little leak. They would learn Mishnayos. Right, we'll find a number of Gemaras that describe how, if you wanted to know, if you want to learn Torah, meaning Torah Shabbat Peh, so you start by learning the Mishnayos. Right, impossible to imagine that you're going to be able to become a Talmid Chacham and you not know Mishnayos. Everybody knew Mishnayos, and anyone who wanted to be a Talmid Chacham, clear. Now, 100, 200, 300 years after the writing of the Mishnayos, so we needed more Perish. So hence, there was what we call a Gemara. And the Gemara was written approximately 500 of the Common Era, where the Gemara there is providing a further clarification of that which was written in the Mishnayos. We also know that in the Gemara, basically there were two Gemaras that were formulated, that were edited. One was in Eretz Yisrael, and one was in Bavel. The one in Eretz Yisrael was primarily attributed to Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, who were early generation Amoraim, and the one in Bavel is generally attributed to Ravina and Ravashi, who was at the end of the Tkufa of the Amoraim. But basically what we have in our hands are a set of Gemara Bavli, or what we would call Talmud Bavli, and we also have Talmud Yerushalmi. And so let me now present a very simple question. Of the two, which got our attention for the last 1,500 years? And the answer is obvious. And we know the answer. The Bavli has gotten our attention for the last 1,500 years. Okay, Rabbi Meir Shapiro, short 100 years ago, came up with this very simple idea, but the best ideas are the simplest ideas, in which we're going to learn a daf a day. Right? Was it ever considered or entertained that a daf a day would be a daf of Talmud Yerushalmi? No. Happens to be, just as a parenthetical note, we do learn a Masechta of Yerushalmi in the Daf Yomi cycle. So, okay, so Shkalim, there's no Bavli on the Shkalim, there's Yerushalmi on the Shkalim. So we do learn one Masechta of Yerushalmi, but again, we all know that that the Daf Yomi, when learning a page of Talmud, is going to learn the Bavli, not the Yerushalmi. But really, the truth of the matter is that that's just a simon. That's not a raya for anything. The real raya is, what are the Rishonim commenting on? When Rashi is writing a parish, what is he writing a parish on? When the Ramban is writing a parish, what is he writing a parish on? When the Gaonim are writing Perushim, although they don't write very much, but what are they commenting on? Everybody's commenting on the Bavli. Nobody's commenting on the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi, I just know this because of the of Masechet Shkalim that I went through. I do not know this because I have any other extensive knowledge or experience learning the Yerushalmi. But the Yerushalmi, it's hard to read. It's also in Aramaic, but it's difficult to read. And to be a little bit frank, it's not as edited as the Gemara Bavli. It wasn't historically learned as much as the Bavli. And now, after having gone through this Gemara over here, allow me to present a really simple question. Why? Why over the last 15, 16, 1700 years, when opting with which Talmud we're going to be learning, why do we opt with the Talmud Bavli over the Talmud Yerushalmi? In fact, the Gemara here presents a very solid case that if I didn't know the last 1500 years of history, and you would have told me that there were two Gemaras, Talmud Yerushalmi, Talmud Bavli, and all I had was this Gemara that we just learned together, I would have said, Pashut, we would have been learning the Yerushalmi for the last 1500 years. After the Gemara ended off by saying that Mechashchim Hoshivani, he put me in the dark, and may say all of them like the dead of the world, and then the Gemara says, Zit Talmud Bavli, that's a reference to the Talmud Bavli. If I didn't know the last 1500 years, if I were in a time capsule, and I came back now, I would have said, oh, you know what the Jewish people must have been learning for the last 1500 years? Yerushalmi, obviously. And of course I'm wrong. And we'd only been learning Bavli. Not only, but almost exclusively learning Bavli. And so the question, it's a really simple question. Why? Why are we learning Bavli? Why are we not learning Yerushalmi? Why is our focus on Bavli and not in Yerushalmi? In fact, look at Rashi on the Daf. I didn't read this Rashi. I saved the Rashi for this very moment. Take a look at the Rashi. It's the last Rashi on the Gemara. B'mechashan hoshivani. So Rashi says, Einochin zeh im zeh. Rashi over here, understanding that the Gemara is all flowing together, so they're not nice to each other, and they're not pleasant to each other. The Talmidim in Bavel, and look at the last three words of Rashi, the Talmudim Safek Biyadam. And they did not have a solid, definitive hold on Torah. Okay, that's and that's Rashi just give, and that's Rashi giving the simple pshat in the Gemara. Question is a strong question, right? After seeing the Gemara, after going through the Rashi, the question is a strong question. Just before I even attempt to answer this question, you can imagine there are answers. Before I even attempt to answer the Gemara, on the source sheet that I gave out, if you look at page two over here, I quote the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which we did. I quote the Gemara in Rashi, which we just did. The Gemara in Yuma. Amru Kame de Rabbi Yirmiya. I'm sorry, it's page two. The Gemara in Yuma. There are three sources on page two. So on the third source, Amru Kame de Rabbi Yirmiya. They said something in front of Rabbi Yirmiya. Okay, and by the way, write, underline, highlight the name Rabbi Yirmiya. It's the same Rabbi Yirmiya that we have in our Gemara over here. So Amru Kame de Rabbi Yirmiya. Amar, now not getting into what the issue is over there, but just look at Rabbi Yirmiya's reaction when he heard something that was said out in Bavel. Amar, he said, Bavlai Tifshai. How do I say this nicely? I don't. Bavlai Tifshai. Mishum de dairi ba'ar de chashucha arme shmaita de mechashchan. They live in these dark lands and therefore they say dark things. They're unenlightened, Rabbi Yirmiya says, regarding Talmid Chachamim living in Bavel. Yeah. I know. Okay, so just another another thing to take into consideration regarding the Bavli versus the Yerushalmi.
It didn't sound like they're too arrogant. When the Gemara said that was one of their problems, you wouldn't say from this that they were terribly arrogant, would you?
Well, you mean Rabbi Yirmiyah was an Amor of Eretz Yisrael. He was commenting on the Chachamim of Bavli. Right? Okay. All right. So we are asking really what now is a very, very powerful question. Why are we learning Bavli? Why are we not learning Yerushalmi? Okay. So for starters, a couple of simple observations that we'll make, and then we'll get to some Ma'ar Mekomos in terms of how do some Rishonim and Achronim deal with this issue. Just a couple of comments. First of all, the question, as much as I think the question is great, when all said and done, the question is not great. Because, in other words, sometimes, even when asking a good question, you just have to look at historical reality. Okay? There's a certain reality that we deal with. The reality is we learn the Bavli. So, as much as, you know, wow, what a fascinating Gemara that we just learned Sanhedrin. And what a great question. We should be learning Yerushalmi, right? When all said and done, it's not a question. In other words, there's a certain historical reality that we've been learning Bavli for the last 1,500 years plus, and the Rishonim have all been commenting on the Bavli. So when all said and done, you know that ultimately that's not a question, there's not going to be an answer. It's really more academic than anything else. The historical reality is that we've been learning Bavli because we've been learning Bavli. So that's point number one. Point number two, one can argue that the Yerushalmi should be preferred because and I didn't point this out when explaining the basic difference between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The Bavli doesn't deal with Mishnayos that are not halach lamaisa. Okay, Seder Zrayim, with exception to Brachos. So the Bavli does not treat any of the Mishnayos as Seder Zrayim. Okay, because it's agriculture. And they're living in Bavli. And it's not they don't care, it's just not relevant. Taharos. Okay, except for one Masechta, which is Nida, so the Bavli does not spend any time with Masechta, with Seder Taharos. And again, Tumah Tahara, we're living out in Bavli, Lamai Nafkamina. It is interesting, it's its own shear, is that the Bavli does do Seder Kachim. Which, of course, that's interesting. That deserves its own shear on a different occasion, maybe from a different magid shear. But that's something to take note. Maybe one could also point out that the Yerushalmi does deal with Inyanei Zrayim, Inyanei Taros, because it was written in Eretz Yisrael, and the agricultural law was still enforced even without a base of Mikdash. Tumah Tahara less so without a base of Mikdash, but maybe it's more expansive in that it covers more Masechtos than the Bavli does. That's something else to take into consideration. Again, it's neither here nor there in terms of answering our question, but it's just an important point to realize. Okay, all that now is behind us. Let's attempt to answer our question. Why are we learning Bavli when the Chachamim in Bavel are just simply not as pleasant as the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael? And oh, by the way, today's daf, so it's a good time to bring it up. Today's daf is the Sota Mem Tes. We were Mesayim, the Masechta today. So in today's daf, one of the statements that was quoted, Amar Rabbi Elai bar Yevarchia, Shnei Talmid Chachamim Adarim Be'er Achas, if I have two students, two Talmid Chachamim who are in the same city, Mem Testament Aleph and Sota, they know Chinzela Zeba Alacha, they're not nice to one another in Alacha, Echad Meis Ve'echad Gola. One dies and the other one is sent into exile. Today's daf. Clearly there's something to be said about strained relationship between Talmid Chachamim and the inability of them having a discourse with one another, a pleasant discourse with one another. Okay. Again, that doesn't answer, it just strengthens the question. So how come we're learning Talmud Bavli? So the first thing I'm going to bring down two main sources that discuss this topic. One is a Ritva found in Yuma, and the other is a comment by the Margolius Hayam, Rav Reuven Margolius. Okay. Both of these we're going to see inside. I'll start with the Ritva. The Ritva is commenting on the Gemara in Yuma, which I quoted a little bit earlier, with Rav Yirmiyah said, Pavlai Tifshai, those ill-informed Babylonians, they live in dark lands, therefore they say unenlightened things. Mishum Dedai Barabit Achushcha, Mishmaita Nemachashchan. Perish HaRambam. Now, this is the Ritva quoting the Rambam. This Rambam is in a tshuva, and the best way I know this Rambam, or I'll say it even better, the only way I know about this Rambam is because the Ritva quotes it. But okay, the Ritva quotes it. So Perish HaRambam Zal B'tshuva She'ela D'Rabbi Yirmiyah L'Tami D'Amar Mechashchim O'Shivani K'meitzei Olam Zeh Tama Bavli. So first of all, the Ritva notes, it's quoting the Rambam, that the Gemara in Yuma and the Gemara in Sanhedrin are connected. Right, the Gemara in Yuma says that Rav Yirmiyah refers to the Babylonians as Bavlai Tifshai. And oh, by the way, it's the same Rav Yirmiyah in Gemara Sanhedrin Chav Dalet who says Bemachashchim Hoshivani Bekemeisei Olam, and that's also Rav Yirmiyah saying a reference to the Talmud Bavli. Okay, so and they go hand in hand. We pointed that already. V'taima mishum d'lo neirin lo taima d'masnisa kalacha kema d'neirin lo rabbanan d'eretz Yisrael. And this again, this is the Ritva quoting the Rambam in a tshuva. The Rambam is writing that they in Bavel did not understand the Mishnayos as well as they understood in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Zeranami. And the Rambam says, and oh, by the way, I'm going to quote you a Gemara out of Bava Metzia. Daf Pei Hei. By delishtakech le taime da vavlai mishum delo nehira le vasta deshami taime da ma'arava. Rabbi Zera made aliyah, parenthetically, against the wishes of his Rebbe. Rabbi Zera made Aliyah, and when he went to Eretz Yisrael, he's listening now to the Torah that's being taught in Eretz Yisrael, and he loves it. Problem is that he learned all that Torah in Bavel, and he wants to forget it. So he did. Don't ask me about how effective this is nowadays. It's just one of the rules of life, which is Girsa D'Ankusa. We end up remembering what we learned first better. So, what you need to, he wanted to totally relearn Torah. What did he do? So, the Gemara goes on to describe, the Rambam doesn't quote the Gemara, but the Gemara over there goes on to describe that he fasted day after day, fasted day after day. He basically made himself ill, all the way to the point where he forgot all of his Torah that he learned in Bavel, also that he could relearn it again in Eretz Yisrael. Ayin, Sham, see the Gemara in Bava Metzia describing that incident. In the meantime, however, again, this is not helping. This is only hurting. So, mi olav b'chol adaros hayukain. Here the Rambam now begins to explain what happened. This is not true when it relates to all generations. Ela bimei rabba v'rav Yosef v'abaye v'rava d'hav aluhu shmados. It was during the generations of Rabba, Rav Yosef, Abaye, and Rava, where there was persecution after persecution in Bava. In fact, just in terms of the Doros of the Amorayim, Abaye and Rava are basically right in the center. Meaning the Doros of the Bava, of Talmid Chachamim and Bava starts with Rav and Shmuel, and it goes to the Talmidim of Rav, Rav Chista, Rav Huna, and Rabbi Zera, and it goes all the way to, eventually it goes to Ravina Ravashi. But the midpoint of the Amoraim is Abaye and Rava. So basically what the Rambam is going to do is he's going to take the Tkufa of the Amoraim and divide into two halves. The first half is from Rav and Shmuel to Abaye and Rava. The Rambam says, really you can't blame them. They were suffering persecution. Once again, he quotes another Gemara from Bava Metzia. He quotes a Gemara from Chulin. They were always running away. What were they running away from? Persecution. Rabbi Zera commented that despite the persecution, they still didn't forget Torah. Now, if you're suffering a little bit of financial crisis, like for example, you're borrowing from one year for the next year, there's not enough for this year for this year, and under those circumstances, your head's not going to be put on straight to learn. If you're suffering from shmad, al achas kama v'chama, how much more so will you not be able to remember your learning? V'zeu tamam shor Rabbi Zer v'Rabbi Yirmiyah, and that's the reason why Rabbi Zer and Rabbi Yirmiyah felt that the learning that was going on in Bavel was qualitatively inferior, but the Rambam writes in a tshuva, but don't fault them, because shmad. In other words, they were suffering terrible religious persecution. Aval achar kach nizgavra Torah be'Bavel. However, what happened was, is that basically if you wanted to track the stocks of learning Torah in Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. So basically the stock of Bavel went up, went straight up. So Nisgabra HaTorah beBavel. Kol Shekein bimei Rav Ashi Damrina miyamos Rebbe vad Rav Ashi lo matzinu Torah ugedula bemakom echad. Ad kan divrei Rabbeinu Zal v'chaim heim lamotzeihem. The Ritvaf, according to the Rambam, says that they are chaim. These are the words of the Rambam, their life. They're literally the way to understand and explain. That once you get to the point of Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi is much more comparable to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Torah and Gedula in one place, just like Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was a Gadol in Torah and also the political figurehead and leader of the Jewish people. When you go to the Tkufa of Rav Ashi, you'll find the same thing. Where once again, he was the political leader and also the Torah giant of Bavel. So basically you had an upswing in Bavel going from the midpoint from Abai and Rava all the way to you get to the point of Rav Ashi and Ravina. Ravina and Rav Ashi. Okay. Adkan. So that basically takes us through answer number one. Question. After learning the Gemara and Sanhedrin, how come we're spending so much time on the Talmud Bavli? How come we don't emphasize the Talmud Yerushalmi? How come for Ladori Doros they were learning and analyzing and being mefarish the Gemara Bavli? So the Rambam's answer is that we went through two tkufas of the Amorayim, up to Abai and Rava, and after Abai and Rava, up to Abai and Rava, the quality of learning was not good, as the Gemara over here describes and the Rambam describes. After Abai and Rava, the quality of learning in Bavel drastically improved. Okay. Second suggestion, and with this, well, this will conclude. Second suggestion that's given by the Margolios Yomer of Ruvein Margolios, and he suggests the following. Umin Shema Yesiba Shibasira Amishnam Bezman Rebbe Vesira Tamuda Didan Hishtatfu Gedole Shnei Hamer Kazim Yachad. Rav Ruvein Margolios makes the following suggestion. There always were two Torah communities at the time of the Mishnah, at the time of the Gemara. One in Eretz Yisrael and one in Bavel. I'm sure you know, even well after the Churban Bayis Rishon, after the destruction of the first temple, and the exile of the Jews, there was always a Jewish presence in Bavel all throughout the second temple. Talmid HaChachamim, the Gemara tells us a couple of times how Talmid HaChachamim actually immigrated to Eretz Yisrael during the second Beis HaMikdash. So there was a Jewish community in Bavel for hundreds and hundreds of years, at least 400. So for half a millennia, if you will. And so there were always two basic central communities of the Jewish people, one in Bavel and one in Eretz Yisrael. The Rav Ruvein Margolios makes a suggestion that what makes the Mishnah, meaning Rav Yehuda HaNasi, what makes the Mishnah and the conclusion of the Talmud Bavli such a powerful force, it's because at those two points historically, you had corroboration. You had a collaborative effort between the two Jewish communities. He makes the following argument. Bezman Rebbe Vesiro Talmud Didan Hishtatfu Gedole Shnei HaMer Kazim Yachad. The two central communities got together. There was a certain divine supervision, intervention, where when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi sat down and penned the Mishnayos, so he did so together, collaboratively with Rabbi Nosson HaBavli. And when the Talmud Bavli was finally concluded and finished out in Bavel, Ayde Rav Ashi Yishtatef Ravina HaEretz Yisraeli. We know the Gemara is not just Rav Ashi. We know the Gemara is Ravina and Rav Ashi. What is that? Rav Ruvein Margolios suggests it's a synthesis. It's a combination of the Ravina, who is a Israelite, together with Rav Ashi, who is a Babylonian. Hushu Avi called Ashmuas Vachrosh Obenei Maravel Achra Achrona Bimisifta de Rav Ashi. And what he brought with him is not only his mind, but basically all the amassed Torah that was learned in Eretz Yisrael. And so now the Bavli now becomes a collaborative effort of both communities. Lachra Achrona Bimisifta de Rav Ashi Bechulev Zehu Yipui Koch Mishnah Sen Sharebi Biachas Lashar Sidre Mishnah. That's what makes the Mishnah so much more powerful than all other works. We know at the time of the Mishnah, there were Brisos, Toseftos, and other Tanaitic works that were written at the time. How come they didn't take center stage? Answer says, Rav Reuven Margolios, because the mission of Rav Yehuda Hanasi was done as a collaborative effort of the two central Jewish communities. Same thing with the Talmud. The Yipu Korsha, Talmud Bavli, Al Talmud de Marava, Uvechein Hukbo Alacha, Ka Talmud Bavli. Same thing with the Bavli. What makes the Bavli so great? What makes it so great is that, once again, it's a collaborative effort of the two communities. Okay, a beautiful suggestion by the Margolios Sayyam. So again, just to quickly recap today, we went through the Gemara, Divrei Agadata, regarding the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael and the Chachmei Bavel. The Gemara's high criticism of Chachmei Bavel, the Gemara's final statement by Rav Yirmiya. Question that we asked is, why so much emphasis placed on the Bavli over that of the Yerushalmi? And so two basic approaches, the Rambam and Rav Reuven Margolios. So the Rambam speaks about a low point in the learning in Bavel because of the Shmad, and then making an ascent. But eventually, though, Ravina, Ravashi become the central location of Torah for the second half of the Tkufa of the Amoraim. And then the second approach we saw as Rav Reuven Margolios is that both the Mishnayos and the Talmud Bavli were eventually a collaborative effort of both Chachmei Hador of both communities. And that's what makes the Mishnah so special, and that's what makes the Talmud Bavli so special.